Well, what have you been doing besides powdering your nose?
Wait a minute, maybe he's got something there.
Please hang up and try again.
Welcome to the Digital Trekker. I'm Matt Brandon, and it's been some time since I've done a podcast, and I've been doing the video log, but I haven't really done an audio podcast in over a year probably. And I thought, why not? You know, let's take this opportunity to do a podcast. And the opportunity I'm talking about is I wanted to take some time to introduce you to someone who I'm going to be sharing a workshop with in February, and that's Andrew Gibson. Andrew is a photographer out of the UK, and I've known Andrew now for, I don't know, Andrew, how long have we been at least acquainted? For maybe 3 or 4 years probably, huh?
No longer than that, because I think it was back in 2010 that you interviewed me for David Duchemin's your podcast, but about one of the books that was published on Craft and Vision for David Duchemin.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was when I was doing the Craft and Vision podcast for them.
Yes. That's
yeah.
The one,
that,
yes.
Was that long ago? It was that long ago. Wow. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes. I remember it well, because we were living in Shanghai at the time.
Uh-huh. And then after Shanghai, you moved to Australia, didn't you?
No, New Zealand. We'd actually moved to New Zealand before we went to Shanghai, but decided to spend 6 months in Shanghai because we could.
Oh, because you could. There you go. All right. So I got sort of reacquainted with Andrew in the last 3 or 4 months because we've been doing what is Pete calling this that we're doing?
It's a mastermind group.
Mastermind. Basically, it's peer-to-peer mentoring, and so we've got several photographers that we get together, and we meet once a week, and we talk through all kinds of stuff that we're dealing with, and we try to help each other out. And it's been extremely helpful for me. I don't know, how have you found it?
It's really helpful, because, you know, what we do working from home a lot, I think we can get quite isolated from our networks, which are kind of spread out all over the world. They're not next door. So it's not like you can go and, at least where I live, meet up with people mm-hmm. in a coffee shop nearby and discuss business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've found it to be extremely useful. I mean, I mean, one of the biggest things that seems like we all talk about has been a lot of marketing stuff and how to market ourselves and everything. That's just an area that I'm not that good in. And so it's been great to listen to all of you guys talk about these things. So, but that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about you. I want to talk about your photography, where it's been, what you're doing now, where it's going. Now, you've told me before that you're a photographer, but you don't consider yourself a photographer who makes his living off of the photographs in per se. Is that how would you phrase this?
Yes, I think it's good to make a distinction between someone who's a professional photographer, say for instance somebody who is a wedding photographer and shoots weddings, or somebody who does assignment work or commercial photography, and somebody who teaches about photography by writing about it, which is what I do. So I mm-hmm. do, I mean, I think I could call myself a professional photographer in that I take the photos that I use in my books and for my articles. So from that point of view, yes, you could argue I'm a professional photographer, but I think there's an important distinction to be made between the way that I use my photography and someone who does assignment work or who has clients and, you know, is more involved in that whole side of things.
Do you have stuff up on any kind of stock sites or anything?
I have some up on Alamy, which you've probably heard of, but I've never looked at taking it any further, mainly because the return so far has been really, really low. And I think if you're going to do stock photography and do it in a worthwhile way so that you get a decent return on your investment, you have to commit yourself to it and kind of come up with a plan to keep creating new photos which are sellable and you know, have a good chance of selling on a stock photography website. And I don't think that's easy. I think that's difficult because there's so much stock photography out there. So I don't want to do something like that unless I do it properly.
But you have found a niche, and that is in writing and teaching. And you have, how many ebooks do you have out now?
Well, if you count the total number that I've written, it comes to something like 36, but they're not all for sale at the moment because some of those are second editions, have been rewritten and updated and you know, things like that. So I think I've got about 9 up on Craft and Vision, and off the top of my head, about 16 or 17 on my website.
You don't just write ebooks either. You are guest author on teaching websites like the Digital Photography School, yeah, and other places like that, right? Like, you've written how many articles? Do you think, you told me one time you've written, I mean, dozens, if not more, articles on that website, right?
Yes, Digital Photography School, who I've been writing for probably for about 7 years since I wrote my first article for them. There's over 200 articles on there that have been written by me.
200?
Yes, it adds up.
Yeah, it does. Holy moly. So I would, I think it'd be safe to call you an educator. I mean, that you feel comfortable in that role then, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, how much time did you actually spend with people one-on-one doing it? I mean, do you workshops and things like that?
Well, the workshop or the photo tour that we're doing in Rajasthan will be the first time that I've done that. And it's something that I would like to do in the near future, hopefully. But because we've had quite a nomadic lifestyle, we've never really settled down anywhere for very long. Mm-hmm. Now it looks like we're going to be settled in this area for some time. So I can start thinking about doing workshops and building up a kind of local clientele. Mm-hmm. You know, just having a look to see what's out there, to see what the demand is, and to see what kind of workshop I could offer.
So as an educator in photography, you've got to be pretty well-rounded. But what would you say your forte is within photography?
That's a good question. Because like you say, I'm a bit of a chameleon because I tend to move around between subjects. I haven't specialized in anything, depending on what I'm interested in and what I'm, you know, concentrating on and writing about at the moment. But I do like portraiture. I do like street portraits and street photography. And I like landscape photography as well. And I guess, I mean, I don't really like the phrase, but I do like travel photography, just the idea of going somewhere new, mm-hmm. and taking photos, because, you know, travel photography, it includes a lot of things like portraiture, street photography, landscape photography, urban photography.
Yeah.
It's a big umbrella.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, and it's one of those, terms that it's not very descriptive. I mean, because, you know, like, what is a travel photographer? An American that goes to India and takes pictures there, he's a travel photographer. What about the Indian that takes pictures in India? Is he a travel photographer?
Exactly. I mean, I feel like I'm traveling at the moment because I'm new to the area that we're living in. So I'm still getting out and exploring and getting to know it. So I'm traveling and I feel like a travel photographer when I'm here, but I live here.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think one thing that a travel photographer does do, and that is brings a different perspective to maybe to a place that a local might have, you know, a sort of a fresh set of eyes, if you will.
Oh, for sure. Because, you know, especially if you're working in an area which has a big cultural difference to what you're used to. So when you go to somewhere where the culture is very different, you're kind of looking at it through your own cultural perspective. And that can be very interesting.
There's a nice little segue as we talked a little bit about this trip coming up in Rajasthan. It's your first trip to India, right? You haven't been there before.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you talk about fresh eyes, and I'm looking forward to that, because one of the things I really enjoy when I lead photo workshops, especially to places like India, is sort of almost the childlike giddiness people have when they get out and start taking photos in a place like India, because there's so much what I call low-hanging fruit, if you will. But at the same time, it has its own challenges. What do you think for you? And I know this is going to be a tough question. And you know, you're going into a country you've never been to, a developing country. You know, it's not going to be the easiest to get around in, and to you know, I mean, we've worked everything out, but it's still India. What are the things that you're probably the most concerned about, or the most either concerned or, on the converse, most excited about on this trip to India?
That's a good question. I don't have many concerns, because I think we're in safe hands with you, Matt. But from a photographic perspective, I think the challenges when going to somewhere like India is that I've seen so many amazing photos taken in India, and I kind of put myself under a pressure to take photos that are as good or even better than the ones that I've seen from other photographers. And it's easy to forget that those photographers probably know Rajasthan or India very well, that, you know, when you see an amazing photo taken somewhere by somebody else, you don't know how much work they put into taking that. You know, maybe they were on location for a week before that opportunity presented itself. Maybe they just got very lucky. Maybe they've been working with locals that can help them get into a situation where they can take those photos. So it's kind of a game in that respect. I'm aware that this is going on in my mind, but I have to kind of forget about that. And then when I get there, forget about the photos that I've seen taken by you and by other people, and just kind of react to what's there and find my own path through whatever it is we encounter. And the other thing is, I mean, it's not really a concern, but I'm aware that we are there to help the participants in our group create great photos. We are not there to create great photos for ourselves. So, you know, perhaps it's going to be a situation where I'm surrounded by photogenic things, but we have to be concentrating on helping our clients create their own photos in that situation.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think one of the things that, if there's any criticism that I've heard of workshops, it's usually the top criticism is something to do with I went to this workshop and the instructor seemed to grab all the great shots and gave us the leftovers type of thing. And I know that you and I have talked about this. And one of the things that I make a really, really big deal about on our workshops is making sure that the client, the participant, is the first in and the last out on these kind of things. Because, you know, I know it's a new experience for you, but I've used to live in India and have been there so many times I can't even count anymore. And so I will be able to take you and others and get you guys into the right spot. But I want, and I think you share this, we want, I'll put it like that, our people to walk away saying that was incredible, and look at what I walked away with, and for their sake, but also for ours, because I mean, let's just be frank. If we do this again, you know, these are the kind of people that say, hey, it went so well, I can either A, recommend it, or B, I want to go back and do another trip with Andrew and Matt on something, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, for any type of business, isn't it? Is repeat customers and recommendations, good word of mouth.
Yeah, I think so. So,
but I mean, you know, to back up what you say, I mean, I would be, you know, mortified if we, you know, encountered a photogenic situation and I stepped up front with my camera to take photos and completely forgot about the participants and, you know, the fact that we are there to help them create great photos and to get them into a position or a situation or a local person to take photos of that they probably wouldn't have encountered if they'd gone by themselves, because right. that's, you know, what they're paying us for, is to get them into those situations they wouldn't be able to find by themselves, as well as help them when they actually get there, so that you know, we can make sure that their photos come out the way they want them to.
Yeah. The reason I have invited you on this trip is because of that educational factor that you bring. I think that we'll be able to do a lot of impromptu lessons in the field, taking people by the hand, if you will, both metaphorically as well as sometimes physically, and walk them into situations and say, all right, look, here's a portrait situation. How are you gonna handle this thing? You know, I mean, you wrote a whole book on portraiture, didn't you?
Yes, more to do with street photography and street portraiture. I called it The Candid Portrait.
Yeah, which, I mean, so it's like you wrote it for this trip.
Yes, in fact, yes. I mean, a lot of the photos were taken in China in that book. But yes, it would be nice to do a second edition with photos from India.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that the concepts, though, are going to be completely, you know, valid here. You'll be able to transfer them.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It will be interesting to see the differences between somewhere like China and India in terms of how the local people react. And, you know, you were talking about concerns earlier. I guess if I do have another concern is, you know, how to interact with the locals without, you know, offending people and, you know, keeping everybody happy. In China, it was quite easy because everyone just ignores you.
Hmm.
In India, from what I understand, you tend to have the opposite problem, is that people are attracted to you. They want to talk to you. They want to find out more about you. They're curious. They're friendly. They're interested in you. Obviously, there'll be some people trying to sell things to you as well. So whereas China, you can kind of move through it very anonymously, as if no one even knows that you're there. In India, it would be the opposite. You're probably attracting people to you. So the dynamic will be different.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think that it becomes, I mean, there are instances when it becomes burdensome. But generally, that's not the case. You know, when you're walking through a back street in Jodhpur or in Jaipur, you know, one of the things that we do is because we have three leaders, essentially, we have you, myself, and then my wife comes as a who speaks very, very conversational Hindi, if not somewhat fluent. She'll take a group, you take a group, I take a group, and then we just start walking through the streets. And so we'll average maybe just three people with an instructor or a leader, and so that diminishes that that effect of people coming around all the time. Now, if you ever have traveled with these massive, huge, you know, 360 watt or 600 watt flashes, they're magnets for people. But what happens, though, is that you can work that into a positive. You start setting up a shot with this off camera light. People will start coming around and standing behind you, watching and everything. And then you take a picture or two or three or four, and then you're done. And the next thing you know, you've got four other people wanting to pose for you or to stand in a certain area and have you take their picture. And so it can actually work to your advantage. Yeah, but it's definitely there's no other place quite like India. And one of the things that we're going to be experiencing on this trip that others haven't, and that is we are going to be there right at a very special holiday called Latmar Holi. Holi, which most people know Holi is the big festival of color, where they throw all this colored powder and colored water around. But Latmar Holi is a special event that only happens in a small circle of like three villages, just sort of on the cusp of Rajasthan near Delhi. And there's this tradition that goes back for, I would probably guess, hundreds of years, where the men come into this village and the women put on this show of striking them with big bamboo sticks. And the men actually have shields that protect themselves. And then all these colors are thrown and everything like that. And it's quite a spectacle. And we're going to be actually visiting that village during this holiday. And this is something new for me. I haven't done this either. And so I'm really looking forward to it. But there are very few photo workshops that actually take people into this. Now, it's going to be very crowded. It's going to be very chaotic. But it's definitely a unique experience for these participants. You know what we didn't do? I didn't tell the dates of this workshop that we've got coming up. It's February 13th through the 26th of February in 2018. We're going to be visiting, of course, we'll be in Delhi. Then we're going to go to from Delhi by night train up to Jodhpur, which is the blue city in Rajasthan. And from there, we're going to go to, we'll spend some time there. Then we're going to go to a Bishnoi village, which is, they're sort of like the eco warriors, if you will, but they're a village life type stuff out in the desert. And then we're going to go to Pushkar, which people know Pushkar for the big camel festival, right? But we're not going to be there for that. But Pushkar is another holy city, and so we'll be there photographing there. And then from there, we go to Jaipur, which is the pink city, and then we'll be going all through there. We'll go shoot at the stepwell that we try to do every time I go. And then from there, on the 23rd of February, we'll head to this place called Banasar. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Like I said, I haven't been there. So, but it's that village that all these other villages kind of arrive to for this Latmar Holi. And then we'll do that. And we'll do that for like 3 days, 2 nights. And then we head back to Delhi and then catch our flights home. It's going to be an incredible time. So we've got some spots left. How many spots do we have left?
We have 3 to 4 spots left.
We can take up to 9, so it'll be good. So, but those spots aren't guaranteed, and so you need to, if you're interested, you need to contact Andrew or myself, or go to the website. Go to my website. It's called thedigitaltrekker.com, and then /Rajasthan-2018, and there you get all the information about this. So, you know, we're going to wrap this up pretty soon, but one of the things that everybody always likes to know, and I'd be curious with you, what kind of gear you're planning on taking on this trip? What have you got? Have you bought anything specific for the trip, or what are you planning on taking? You're shooting Fuji these days, aren't you?
That's right. Yes. Yes. So I have 2 X-T1 bodies, and at any one time, I would like to have one lens on one and one lens on another. I tend to use prime lenses. I don't own any zooms at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of my 56mm f1.2 would be very useful. My 35mm f1.4, and then a wide angle lens, the 14mm f2.8. That's what I'm thinking of in terms of lenses. I've been thinking about also bringing a lens baby that I have called the Edge 50, which I bought a couple of months ago, and I've been playing around with that, and that's a lot of fun. It's kind of like a tilt shift effect.
Okay.
And it works quite well and is interesting for portraits, but I'm a bit worried that if I take it, I'm going to use it, because it's so much fun to use, I'm going to use it all the time. And then all my photos will have a tilt shift effect to them, and forget to use any of the other lenses, because it is a lot of fun to use. But that's the danger of it, is that you forget you have other lenses, and all your photos look a little bit the same.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody use a lens baby with a Fuji. It would seem like it's almost be perfect, because you got that EVF and you can see exactly what's happening.
Exactly. It's a manual focus lens, so you have the focus peaking, so you can tell exactly where it's focused, and it's very, very easy to use.
Okay, so they've got a mount for Fuji then?
They have. With this particular lens, they've got a Fuji mount for it. Otherwise, with some of their models, you would have to use an adapter.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, well, that list of lenses is what I've used for years on these trips. So you're set. What about flash? You planning on taking any flash, doing any flash work?
Yes, because I've ordered a Godox flash, which arrived a few weeks ago, and I haven't used it much yet, just to quickly test it out. So it will be interesting to take that and use that in some situations as well.
That's good. The only thing I would add to that as far as my gear would be, I'll definitely be shooting the 10-24. I find that extremely helpful. And maybe by then I'm going to be shooting the GFX. So that could be a lot of fun.
You're going to be the envy of everybody.
Maybe. I don't know. That's one of those beasts, you know? I mean, as much fun as it is and the amazing images that it makes, it also is a big step backwards in some ways for Fuji shooters, because one of the reasons that I got into Fuji was because it's such a light, small camera, and the GFX is brilliant as it is the size of like a DSLR. So, which is still small, in some ways for a medium format camera, but still. Okay. Now you also wrote a book on composition. In fact, you wrote a book that I interviewed you about you've probably written more than one book on composition. How many books have you written on composition?
Well, one that I published on my website and two really that deal with the subject of composition for craft and vision.
Yeah, you had one something about don't believe the rule of thirds or something. What was it called?
Well, it was called Beyond Third. So it wasn't really criticizing the rule of thirds, but it was about, if the rule of thirds is the most basic thing that you can learn about composition, how to get beyond that? What are all the other things that that matter when it comes to composition?
Okay, so we'll have plenty to talk about on this trip with students. One of the things I like to do is in the evenings, if we have time and if people are up for it, and really it really is a matter of if the participants are up for it, because these can be quite exhausting days, but have some critique sessions where people will submit some images and then the whole group gets around and we constructively critique the images, and we best to do that early on in the trip so that the participants can actually apply those things that they're learning in their images. So I think that'll be something we can look forward to as well.
Mm-hmm. Do we have to put our own images forward for that as well, Matt?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
So, a chance for us to learn as well.
That's right. Oh yeah, I'm always learning on these things. Mm-hmm. That's the good thing about these things.
But I think also it's good for people to see perhaps that, hopefully we create some good images when we're there. I'm sure we will. But for people to see the photos that are not so good, that kind of, the stepping stones to the good pictures, the process we go through, almost like looking at somebody's contact sheets in the olden days when everybody had contact sheets.
Yeah, I don't show people those images. Sorry. Yeah, no, that's true. No, I mean, in fact, sometimes, that's, I think I may have even done a blog post on that one time where you take a series of photos and you realize, okay, that one's not so hot. That one's not so hot. And that one's, that one's pretty good. One of the things that I like to teach on is when you're learning these concepts or rules of composition, is that oftentimes it's very prescriptive, and so we're telling them how to do something or why something works. But we can dump so much information on people that they don't really get it in the field to where when they're taking the picture, they're thinking about all that stuff as they're taking a photo. And that's when I tell people, well, okay, so I'm telling you this now in a prescriptive thing, because later you're going to be looking at your Lightroom or your contact sheet type of a thing, your Lightroom catalog, and then you're going to start applying this in a descriptive setting to where you're going to look at these things and go, oh yeah, when Andrew taught me about leading lines, or he taught me about negative space, or he taught me about colors, I can see that now. And out of these four images, the strongest one is the one that has these lines and this color and these compositional elements. And and now I understand why that's the strong image.
Yeah, I think it takes time for all of these concepts to become internalized so that you can apply them without really thinking about it on a more instinctive level.
Yeah, I think so. I think it definitely does. It's not something that Henri Cartier-Bresson says that I forget the exact quote, but basically that visual organization is something that is developed over time. And I think he's talking about composition here. It doesn't always come just naturally, you know. I think a lot of people think yes. that it is, but it's developed.
So, it's a skill, yes, yeah. It has to be learned. And probably he said it in French as well.
I think he probably did. Yeah. Oh, brother. Okay. All right. So listen, we're going to wrap this up. And hey, thanks for being on my little podcast here. And I look forward to find, you know, we've never actually met face to face. I know people don't know that, but we've known about each other for almost 7 years, and now we're in this weekly Skype group, but yet we've never met face to face. So I'm looking forward to meeting you and hanging out and maybe quaffing a brew or two together.
Yes, no, it would be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, Andrew, have a great day, and we'll talk soon. And again, be sure to send us an email if you're interested in the Rajasthan Photo Workshop. That's February 13th through the 26th of 2018. If you know for sure you just want to go, just head on over to the website. You can see the description or the URL in the link below, but it's the Digital Trekker, that's 2Ks, digitaltrekker.com/Rajasthan-2018. There's all the information about the trip with plenty of photos. And so it should answer all your questions. But if you need more information, just email me at images@thedigitaltrekker.com or Andrew. Andrew, what's your email address?
They can use andrew@creativephotographer.com. There's a hyphen between the words creative and photographer.
Thanks so much, and we will speak with you soon.
Hey, thank you.
Lucy!
Please hang up and try again.
He's looking at you, kid.
You've been listening to thedigitaltrekker.com. I'm Matt Brandon.
And that's all, folks.